as Sandy moves ashore. Witness the shutdown before the storm. From APM, it's the Marketplace Midday Update podcast. I'm Jeff Horwich. This is the 29th of October. Happy Monday. As you might expect, we've spent much of our morning storm chasing shop owners, utilities. We've got our man Hobson on the ground in New York City, which, if you take a look at the old internet, is beginning to take on water. We'll also wish a happy 20th birthday to NAFTA. In one more year, I can take it out for a beer.
This podcast is supported by American Express Bank FSB, offering high-yield savings accounts designed with convenient features to help reach savings goals. To learn more or open an account online, visit personalsavings.com/savings. Member FDIC.
Hurricane Sandy could turn out to be the widest, if not the strongest, storm to ever hit American shores. Nine governors have so far declared states of emergency. New York City today is preparing for the assault. My Morning Report colleague Jeremy Hobson is based in New York, and this morning he's been on the streets of Manhattan for us as the storm bears down. Good morning, Jeremy.
Morning, Jeff.
We've been checking in with you off and on this morning. Can you feel the storm starting to move in this hour?
You know, to some degree, the wind gusts are getting higher. There's more rain, certainly, than there was earlier this morning. There are also more people out. There are some people in this city who are going to work, whether by taxi or just on foot. Of course, the buses and the subways are closed, which makes it very difficult, which is why a lot of the stores in Manhattan have closed down, because there just is no way for the employees to get to or from work. Also, Jeff, you know, the bridges and tunnels, which are the way that these cars are getting in and out, may close at any time as this storm intensifies. So some of these people may end up stranded here later on today.
And probably a fairly minimal amount of activity on Wall Street, I would think.
That's right. The New York Stock Exchange is going to be closed down today. And it's the first time, by the way, that it's closed since the few days after 9/11, the terrorist attacks in 2001. Also, the first time it's closed for weather reasons since Hurricane Gloria back in 1985. Also, the NASDAQ is going to be closed down. Now, some banks are saying that their employees will be working from home today. They've come up with contingency plans. So there will be some activity, but certainly not very much.
My Morning Report colleague Jeremy Hobson for us near Union Square in Manhattan. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff.
Businesses in the path of Hurricane Sandy are preparing for anything but business as usual today. One of them is the Milk and Honey Market. It's a neighborhood grocery store and cafe in West Philadelphia. Mauro Daigle is the owner. Good to talk with you.
Thanks.
So what's a big storm like this going to do to your business?
Well, we can already see that we didn't get our bakery deliveries this morning. So after this interview, I'm going to be driving to the bakeries to see if I can get my bread. We depend on a lot of small independent businesses that often do their own deliveries. And that's the first thing that goes.
How about customer traffic? Good or bad?
As of right now, we have no customers. Kind of no one's out on the street at the moment. So we'll make a judgment call here in a little bit to find out if it makes any sense to be open.
What was your experience like ahead of the storm? Folks stocking up, I'd imagine.
Yeah, we sold out of a lot of the staples. Bread sold out immediately. Then, we went through maybe double the amount of eggs we would normally go through, a lot of milk.
What is sort of the nightmare scenario for you, I suppose, and your business as this storm moves in?
The worst thing that could happen to us is that we lose power for an extended period of time citywide. We would lose all our refrigeration, and I checked with my insurance agent, and apparently I'm a little bit undercovered or grossly undercovered. So that's the most likely worst-case scenario.
Like many people, I would imagine you're sort of stuck between looking after your business and your family, and of course you want to do both. How are you finding that balance?
Well, my wife is looking after our family, and I'm dealing with the business. I've already tried to take care of my tenant this morning. Her roof was leaking, and now I'm going to try to deal with some employees are stuck because Amtrak shut down, and we had people away for the weekend, and they can't get back in. So I will be trying to sort of do their job and, just sort of do the best you can.
Mauro Daigle owns the Milk and Honey Market in West Philadelphia. Thanks, and wish you the best.
Good talk to you.
Forecasters say Mauro and others in the Northeast could well be facing power outages, but utility companies and their customers feel like they're still recovering from the last storm, as Shannon Mullen reports.
It's been barely a year since Tropical Storm Irene caused over $10 billion in damage. Here in New England, utility companies are still explaining why it took so long to turn the lights back on. Al Lara is spokesman for the largest one, Northeast Utilities. He says the company has spent big bucks trimming trees near power lines to prevent future damage.
It's a significant investment, but what the storms from last year have taught us is that it's something that is required.
Power outages can lead to a third of the economic damage from a big storm, says Chuck Watson with the risk assessment firm Kinetic Analysis. He estimates Sandy's overall price tag could top $15 billion.
Just about everyone at all levels can suffer from these kinds of events. For instance, instead of maybe expanding your warehouse and adding a couple of workers, now you're having to cover the deductibles to fix the roof.
Watson says small businesses and hourly workers will especially lose out as Sandy makes landfall on a Monday. In Boston, I'm Shannon Mullen for Marketplace.
Okay, and let's do the numbers. Stormy weather indeed. In fact, stormy weather has shut down U.S. stock markets for the day, and perhaps tomorrow, we will see. Bond markets are open only until noon Eastern time. Stocks closed flat in Tokyo, down on the major Chinese markets. European stocks closed lower as two of the continent's weaker economies met for talks. Leaders of Spain and Italy were comparing notes today in Madrid. The continent-wide Stock 600 index ended the day down about 0.2%. We got new data from the Commerce Department this morning showing consumer spending rose 0.8% in September. Not bad, certainly better than what was expected. Most U.S. financial activities, as I said, have been suspended today, but at least one company has braved the hurricane and released its financial results. Burger King saw an unexpected jump in profits in the third quarter. Any boost in its share price, though, we'll have to wait until we get through one whopper of a storm. Yeah, that's about as much fun as you can have with a hurricane.
This podcast is supported by American Express Bank, FSB, offering high-yield savings accounts with a competitive variable interest rate and convenient access via phone or web. Link your existing bank accounts without switching banks. To learn how this FDIC-insured high-yield savings account can complement your savings goals and to open an account online, visit personalsavings.com/savings. Member FDIC.
Well, nobody's trading U.S. stocks today, but you can bet folks with money in weather derivatives will be watching their portfolios. It's a kind of obscure area of finance that gets a fresh look whenever Mother Nature throws a curveball like this. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman is here to explain it a bit for us. Hello, Mitchell.
Hi, Jeff.
All right, weather derivatives. What are these things?
Well, they have these exotic names, catastrophic bonds, industry loss warrants. Basically, it's a hedge. It's a way for a company to protect itself against financial hits from weather. Look, they can't predict individual storms like Sandy, but they know Mother Nature's going to spring these things from time to time, says Nick Ernst at the New York firm Evolution Markets.
Any weather event that is going to affect the bottom line, we have the ability to write a product to protect it.
And what he'll arrange is a kind of insurance. It'll reimburse a company for lost revenue from weather. So if it's a utility or a ski area, maybe that's a warm winter snap where heating bills or lift tickets suddenly plummet. Mm-hmm. It could be e-commerce companies whose servers crash in a huge storm blackout. And, of course, property insurers.
So if you look at Florida, you look at sort of the Gulf Coast, the insurers have taken on a lot of risk in those areas. And so they try to take some of that risk and move it off of their books.
Okay, Mitchell. So who takes on that risk, though? Who's on the other side of the bet?
Big surprise here. Hedge funds, big banks, other insurance companies. They're profiting when big weather events don't happen because these companies that need protection are paying a premium. This market's going to grow. It's already $15 billion. It's going to grow probably as weather becomes more severe and more costly. And by the way, for Sandy, for this storm, it's too late to get one of these derivatives. Any storm that's already in the water, Ernst says, can't be hedged against anymore.
All right. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman, thank you.
You're welcome.
This year marks the 20th anniversary of NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement. Setting up the world's largest free trade zone had promised to create jobs in Mexico so that fewer Mexicans would need to illegally immigrate to the U.S. But since then, the number of people living here undocumented has nearly quadrupled. Devin Brown reports now, the first of a two-part series from the Fronteras Desk.
Let me tell you a story first.
Omar's story starts with the story of his father, who moved from a tiny pueblo to the northern Mexican state of Sonora in the early 1980s with only a third-grade education, determined to make it.
He was like, I can do it. I can handle it.
And Omar, who asked that we only use his first name, says his dad did make it. He started a business making meals for workers at a new car manufacturing plant in the city and did so well that he was able to buy a house for his family in cash. But a decade later, when it was Omar's turn to enter the labor force, Mexico had changed, and NAFTA was a big reason why. The trade agreement lifted tariffs that had been on U.S. commodities like wheat and corn, making them suddenly very cheap in Mexico. The local food suppliers Omar's dad had been using for years couldn't compete, and so neither could Omar's dad.
So he couldn't make it.
And a different, more industrialized food company took over.
Instead of using eggs, I mean, they use like powder eggs or powder milk.
Omar's family lost their house, and Omar quit school at 14 to work full-time. He found that even for entry-level jobs, a high school diploma mattered. English mattered, two things which Omar's dad hadn't had to worry about in pre-NAFTA Mexico.
And it was like 1,000 times harder for me.
It seemed to Omar that the only place where it was still feasible to make it was the United States. So in 2002, he moved to Arizona and started working illegally. That same year, researchers estimate that about 600,000 other Mexican immigrants also came to the U.S. Originally, NAFTA had promised to create enough new manufacturing jobs to absorb all the people who now couldn't compete with U.S. agribusiness. But economic sociologist Kathleen Schwartzman says that's not what happened.
And that's one of the sources of the migratory push, because there wasn't an adequate match.
After 10 years in the States, Omar is finally opening his own business, a house painting company. He's raising his son to believe in the same U.S. he found in the early 2000s, just as his father raised him to believe in the Mexico of the 1980s. But since Omar knows the economic landscapes of places tend to change, he has a backup plan for his son.
Well, I will encourage him to learn some Chinese, by the way. You never know.
In Phoenix, I'm Devin Brown for Marketplace.
Wrapping up here with a couple quick items. Steve Jobs was not known for his ostentatious living, but one exception was the custom yacht that he was working on right up until his death 1 year ago. Well, the 250-foot yacht is finally finished. The Venus was christened yesterday at the Dutch shipyard where it was built. The Jobs family was on hand for it. It's kind of an odd-looking thing, if I do say so myself. Very angular, minimalist design. He put it together with the designer Philippe Stark, who I guess that's kind of his thing. Anyway, you can see pictures of it at Mashable.com if you want to. From the bridge of the yacht, it appears to be run by, what else, 7 Apple iMacs. All in a row. And before we close, just circling back to the hurricane here, I'll call your attention to one of the most talked about tweets of the morning. And it comes to us from Lindsay Lohan, who writes, quote, "Why is everyone in such a panic about the hurricane? I'm calling it Sally. Stop projecting negativity." Well, the weather today, by the way, in Lindsay's home of Los Angeles, sunny and 85. Enjoy that. I'm Jeff Horwich. That's all for the Marketplace Midday Update. And this is APM. American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.